This is Digital Story Podcast number 1057, June 23rd, 2026. Today's theme is When Black and White is Better and When It Isn't. I'm Derek Story. During an interesting walk through a graveyard with dappled lighting, I was reminded of how powerful black and white photography can be, and at the same time, when it absolutely fails. Join me for a stroll together so we can figure this out. I hope you enjoy the show. A few days ago, we had a family hike that led us to a historic graveyard atop a hill in western Sonoma County. I was carrying my OM System OM3 with the Olympus 14-42 Easy Zoom. It was a perfect camera for the day. Compact, light, and creative. One of the things that I like about the OM3, and the Nikon ZF for that matter, is that they both have physical dials that makes it easy to toggle back and forth between color and black and white photography. This made it simple to creatively approach the weathered statues and gravestones beneath the canopy of trees in the morning light. At first I began with color only. I looked for juxtapositions of flowers and objects against the monochrome tones of the graveyard. Then I would see a splash of light break through the tree canopy and switch to black and white to better highlight the illuminated object. Some of my compositions worked and others did not. Afterward, while examining the entire shoot on my MacBook Air, I drew some conclusions about when color was the better choice and when monochrome shined. And this was interesting to me. You know, I sometimes just go off feel, you know, like, oh, this feels like a black and white moment. This feels like a color moment. I do like to shoot both, and I shoot both regularly. And as I said, two of the cameras that I'm often using make it very easy to switch back and forth between color and black and white. But on this particular shoot, as I was looking at the pictures, some things really jumped out at me that I think I instinctively sort of followed in the past, but they really came to the forefront today. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I should talk about this a little bit. Maybe there's a reason why I had these epiphanies. And one of the biggest things that I noticed when I was looking at the gallery of shots was that object separation was a key factor in deciding between which way to go, color or black and white. For example, when a beam of light broke through the trees and illuminated a statue, the black and white worked really well. The contrast of the darker background with the bright subject was fantastic. It really was. And monochrome held the highlight detail better and provided some very dramatic images. And that's one of the things that I've noticed about my monochrome shots is that when there is a splash of light on an object that's very bright compared to, let's say, the rest of the scene, in color, I have a harder time making that look good, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, you know, I can recover highlight detail, but it just so often looks burned out to me in color, whereas in black and white, it really looks nice more often than not. I mean, that contrast, that little bit of highlight detail, I don't have any color shifts to worry about. And, you know, that's one of the situations where I think black and white just works really well for me. When the lighting was more consistent, in other words, I had more of an even lighting across the composition, and there wasn't this bolt of lightning coming in somewhere, the black and white shots, in my opinion, tended to look too busy. In other words, there wasn't anything to create enough tonal separation between my main subject, whatever that happened to be, or my main subjects, and then whatever was going on in the background. And a lot of time what was going on in the background were trees and branches and, you know, leaves and stuff like that, other headstones. When I did that in black and white without some sort of big tonal separation, it just got busy. The composition got busy. One of the things that I could do if I had my entire kit with me was maybe put on a telephoto lens and open up the aperture, narrow the depth of field, and then try to get that separation going that route, you know, where I have the subject in focus and then behind the subject, if I had enough distance, then behind the subject, I could soften that background and create more of that separation. And that would allow me to shoot in color or in black and white. But I don't always have my full kit with me. And, you know, that is the case so often these days, because what I'll do is I'll just grab a camera on the way out the door and make sure I have a lens on it that's fairly versatile. And then that's what I go with. I mean, in part, it's because I don't want to carry a bunch of stuff with me. I mean, it was really nice on this hike, and we did have to hike up a pretty substantial hill to get to the graveyard. But it was really nice just having the OM3 with the little lens on there slung around my shoulder. You know, I put it so that it's in the middle of my back, you know, while I'm hiking, so it's not bouncing around. I hardly feel it at all. Yet, you know, when I need it, I have a zoom lens that goes from moderately wide to moderately telephoto, covering most of the things that I need. And then the camera itself, of course, has so many creative functions that that is also a delight. So I'm not carrying a telephoto lens. I'm not carrying a camera bag. I'm not doing all that kind of stuff. And I have found that to be the case, as I said, more and more these days, kind of going with one camera, one lens, and then see what I can do. That also allows me to creatively figure out, you know, some solutions to some situations, like the situations I had in the graveyard where I wanted some separation on some of the shots. Sometimes I didn't, but often I did if I found something really interesting. And how do I do that without a long telephoto lens shooting at f2 or whatever it happens to be, f2.8? And that's where going back and forth for me between color and black and white allowed me to work with this light kit that I had and still get the kind of shots that I wanted. So in color, when I have more even lighting, I begin to notice that there are distinct differences between the different greens of the foliage. You know, one tree has one color of leaves, another tree will have a different color. Obviously, anything that's growing on the ground is going to be its own color. Then if there are any flowers, any purple flowers or yellow flowers, which we have this time of year in Sonoma County, there's another differential. Leaves on the ground, tokens left behind by visitors. There are all sorts of interesting things, a vase of flowers or an American flag, color things that again would allow you to build them into a composition and make it interesting. And when I say build them into the composition, that's me moving around to get the right angle. That's not me touching any of the items. I don't do that at all. And then the other thing that I noticed in color is that even the gravestones and the statues themselves are different colors and different shades. Sometimes they're very gray, stone gray, but I noticed a lot of times they got very warm. There were some very warm colors, some light browns, some greens of things that was growing on the stones and the statues. So there's differentiation that way too. And it was just easier in color in the even lighting to create a composition where I could draw the viewer's eye to where I wanted him or her to go without having that bolt of light or without having to use a telephoto lens. I could just use the color palette that was in front of me to do that. All that being said, my hero shots were the dramatic black and whites. I mean, they were the ones that I loved. I'll have one of the shots for you in the show notes. But boy, when I got some light coming in that highlighted an object, a statue, for example, just the way that I wanted, a darker background, but yet there would be some subtle lighting, you know, in different spots in the background. Oh my gosh. Then the texture of the stonework, all of that stuff. I mean, it was really, those were my favorite shots. Those were my favorite shots. But I came away with many that I liked, some in color and some in black and white. So the reason why, of course, that I'm talking about this is that I know many of you are also traveling lighter these days. You're not taking your whole camera bag with you. You maybe have a Fujifilm X100, or you have a Ricoh GR, or you have the OM system with one of its smaller lenses on it. Maybe the Panasonic L10 that's just coming out. Since we're traveling that way more often, that doesn't mean that we have to give up subject isolation and those sorts of things. We just have to solve the problem a little differently. And I think if you're open to shooting both in black and white and color, then I think that you can achieve a lot that you want to achieve in your compositions just working with the camera and the lens that you have. Preparing for Costa Rica. Well, as you're listening to this, I'm in Costa Rica. I recorded this right before I went out the door. That's right. On Monday, I had a red eye on Monday night to get me to San Jose, Costa Rica. And the reason why I took a red eye is not because I particularly like them, is because that was the only nonstop flight I could get from San Francisco to San Jose, Costa Rica. And I took it, and I was particularly motivated to find a nonstop flight. Why? Well, maybe some of you recall what I went through last year when I was going down there. I could not find a nonstop flight. There was none. There were zero. So I ended up having to take a flight that went from San Francisco to Dallas-Fort Worth, have a layover there, and then from there down to San Jose, Costa Rica. And I just had a funny feeling about it. I just wasn't overly confident in the itinerary and me getting there on time, because I do have to get there on time, because the next day the bus leaves. And if the bus leaves, the bus is gone. There's no, you know, we're not hanging around at the hotel near the airport. We're out of there. So I definitely had to make that bus if I was going to be part of the workshop. Last year, what I did was that I packed carry-on only, which I don't mind doing for a 3-day trip, a 4-day trip, but a 9-day trip, that is too long to be carrying on only. But I just felt comfortable doing that, knowing that at least I could have my luggage with me all the time. And doggone it, did I get to San Francisco Airport only to have the flight canceled. Yes, that flight was canceled to Dallas-Fort Worth. Going up to the desk and saying, I really need to get to Dallas-Fort Worth by this time. Having a very good person working the desk find me a flight from, guess what, San Jose, California to San Jose, Costa Rica. Yeah, it's kind of funny, isn't it? Well, now the problem is that San Jose, California is about 45, 50 minutes from San Francisco Airport. And you have to figure out a way to get there too, because I could not take my car because my plane is coming back to San Francisco when I return. What I did was I caught an Uber down to San Jose. I did catch the flight and I did make it on time, although I was rode hard and put away wet by the time I got to Costa Rica. And I did have my luggage and my camera gear with me. That is why that little incident cemented in my brain why I really wanted a nonstop flight, even if I have to take a red eye, which is what I'm doing this time. And you know what? I'm gladly taking it, because now I have a medium-sized suitcase that allows me to have enough change of clothes and all the things that I need to be comfortable for the entire week down in Costa Rica and not have to scrimp and be washing stuff in the sink and then trying to dry out my underwear the next morning with a blow dryer because it didn't dry when I hung it up because the humidity is so intense. In fact, I felt like that when I hung up laundry that I had wrung out the night before, it was even wetter the next morning when I got up. So I have none of that this year. So anyway, I was able to record the podcast before catching my red eye tonight. And I'm very happy that this all is just working out fine. I'm going to knock on wood that nothing goes sideways between now and my arrival in San Jose, Costa Rica. But while we're down there, I'm going to use different gear this year. And I like doing that. I don't always take the same stuff. I mean, last year, I had fun taking a Pentax DSLR and some telephoto lenses and some Olympus gear, my OM-1. Had a great shoot, came home with all sorts of wonderful stuff. This year, I'm going a little different route. I'm taking the bridge camera, the Panasonic FZ300, which gives me up to 600 millimeter telephoto lens in that little bridge camera that I can carry around. Plus, it's weather resistant. So, and it's going to be raining off and on probably every day while I'm in Costa Rica. So weather resistance is a fantastic thing to have. And then I'm going to take the Nikon. I'm going to take the ZF. And I have my trusty 28 to 400 millimeter lens. But when I shoot in crop mode, then that 400 lens becomes a 600 millimeter lens. And then I have a couple other optics that I'm taking as well. So all of that is just going to be great. I'll be shooting with different gear. And what I did was, you may recall this from when I was talking about the Canadian Rockies, is that I used the Canadian Rockies as my dry run for Costa Rica. Now you may be thinking, well, how's that going to work? Talk about two different environments. Yes, that's very true. However, the bag that I packed, my gear bag, which is a Think Tank backpack that has, you know, everything in it, my laptop, my iPad, my cameras, you know, some extra clothing, all that stuff. Basically, the kit is the same, right? That kit is the same. What was different, of course, is in the suitcase where I had all sorts of warmies for the Rockies. And then I have all sorts of rain gear for Costa Rica. But my backpack was the same. And I'm really glad that I did that dry run because I discovered that even as tightly as I packed the backpack, my gear bag, I had a couple items in there that I just didn't use once the entire trip. And I found that I really liked shooting either with the FZ300 when I was just bouncing around, or if something got serious, then I was shooting with the Nikon with the long zoom lens and hardly anything else. Hardly anything else. So doing that allowed me to really trim down and just take, you know, what I think I need for this trip. And so I'm really happy about that. Of course, the MacBook Air doesn't weigh too much. I have an iPad mini. So all of that packs really well. So I'm even more efficient going to Costa Rica than last time I went, and even more efficient than the Canadian Rockies trip because I had that dry run with this gear. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that pans out. Of course, I will let you know about all of that. Now, the next podcast that I do will be from Costa Rica, and I'm going to try to find a room where we can get the best acoustics possible. We did one from there last year, and I was really happy with the content, but for the life of me, I could not find a room where we could get in there that wasn't bouncy, bounce, bounce in terms of sound. So I'm going to try to get you better audio this year for the Costa Rica podcast. However, I know you'll bear with me because you know I'm doing the best I can under these travel circumstances. But it will be fun because that podcast will be near the end of the trip and we'll be able to talk about some of our adventures. So I'm ready to go. I'm going to catch a flight here in a few hours. And next time I talk to you, I'll be talking to you from Costa Rica. Can't wait. I have some camera industry news. There's an article going around that's been on a couple different sites. It was put together by OM System, and it's a terrific article, and it's called Discovering and Using the Unique Features of OM System Cameras. Now, I put the Petapixel version on, so I have a link to it in the show notes. But if you shoot with OM System, I think you're going to love this article. Let me read you a little bit about it. OM System cameras have enormous range of unique and uncommon features. Getting to know what they can do can open up a whole new world of photographic opportunities. It's widely acknowledged that OM System is the market leader in innovative features in computational photography. The cameras sport a range of often exclusive functions that let you do things with them that most other cameras cannot. If you own one of their cameras, you may have noticed features that intrigue you. Therefore, here are brief explanations of the major features and where to find them. While the following functions are available on the OM-1 Mark II flagship model, not all features are available on every camera in the range. I've included the menu position on the OM-1 Mark II, and it will be similar, if not precisely the same, on the other models. There will be some more pronounced differences too. For example, the OM-3 has a creative dial on the front of the camera that accesses some functions, and it shares with the OM-5 Mark II a CP button that serves as a shortcut to computational photography settings. The OM-1 has neither of these. Meanwhile, the most basic OM-D EM-10 Mark IV still uses the old menu system. Hi-Res Shot uses sensor shift technology to produce ultra-high resolution images. The camera shoots several photos in quick succession, moving the sensor slightly and precisely between each frame. It then combines these into a single high-resolution image. There are two options. Handheld, it can produce a 50-megapixel image, 8,160 by 6,120 pixels. However, when used with a tripod, it will produce a massive 80-megapixel image, 10,368 by 7,776 pixels. Next feature he talks about, live ND shooting, which a lot of us just absolutely love. The function applies a neutral density filter digitally up to ND 128 on the OM-1 Mark II. That means you can achieve much slower shutter speeds than otherwise would be possible without fitting a filter to the lens. It is only available in shutter priority or manual modes. Although typically used for waterfall and seascape photography, you can also use it for other creative photos, if necessary, in conjunction with a glass filter. Then we have live GND shooting. Live GND works similarly to live ND shooting. It digitally applies a graduated neutral density filter to balance between the bright skies and darker foregrounds. You can use the joystick and arrow keys to move and adjust the filter's position. And he has screenshots of the menus and so forth, so that if you go to this article, then you can see precisely where the settings are for the particular function that he's talking about. The next one is focus stacking. This feature automatically captures multiple images at different focus points and combines them to achieve an extended depth of field throughout the scene. The camera automatically adjusts focus incrementally across the scene, then processes the images to create a single photo with sharp focus from foreground to background. Mainly used in macro work, it can also be useful for product and landscape photography, as well as scientific and technical documentation, all of which require front-to-back sharpness. HDR, high dynamic range. This feature automatically captures multiple exposures and combines them to preserve detail in both highlights and shadows. The camera captures several images at different exposure values and computationally merges them to create a single image with an extended dynamic range, revealing details in both highlights and shadows. It's perfect for high contrast scenes, such as interior photography with windows or landscape photography in challenging lighting. He then talks about Lifetime and LiveBulb. Lifetime provides a real-time preview during long exposures, allowing photographers to see the image building up on the live view screen and stop the exposure at the right moment. Then he has live composite, which combines multiple long exposures, adding only new brighter elements to the image. One takes an initial base exposure, then adds only brighter pixels from subsequent exposures, preventing overexposure while building up the light trails. This is such a cool feature, I have to tell you. Then there's Pro Capture Mode, and it first appeared on the OMD EM1 Mark II back in 2017. Other manufacturers are now adopting it, and it appears in their top-end cameras. It continuously buffers images and saves frames both before and after the shutter is pressed, ensuring precise timing for unpredictable subjects. Therefore, it removes your reaction time from the equation, saving the moment of shutter release plus several frames before it. It gets into AI subject detection, which is very much, again, with many cameras now, super helpful. Starry Sky Autofocus, which I've used handheld even, which is just crazy to capture a starry sky hand-holding a camera. Keystone Composition, which I've used in urban settings, and I think it works fantastic, and that is basically on all of the OM cameras. Multiple exposure, art filters and art bracketing, fisheye compensation, digital teleconverter. I mean, the list goes on and on. This is really a fantastic article that goes over all of these features. And if you have one of these cameras and you just need a little refresher, especially now that we're getting into the summer photography season, I highly recommend going over to the link in the show notes, checking this out. This is probably one you're going to want to bookmark. Fujifilm X100 VI versus Panasonic Lumix LX10, which compact is actually better for travel? Now, it's interesting they put the LX10. It's the L10. It's not the LX10. Oh, I thought that was kind of funny. And I'm just at the article right now. This is on F-Stoppers, and no one has caught that one yet. So it still reads the LX10. Let's see what it is when you get there. I'm just going to say L10 as I read it. All right, here we go. Choosing a compact travel camera is harder than it looks, especially when two solid options sit at very different price points with very different sensor sizes, lenses, and feature sets. The Fujifilm X100 VI and the Panasonic Lumix L10 both pitch themselves as small, capable, everyday cameras, but they take genuinely different approaches to getting there. Now, this is a video, and they actually have the video in the article. Julia, she goes over all the different comparison points, and she talks about sensor size, you know, Micro Four Thirds versus the APS-C, and basically said that in good light, she really couldn't tell the difference. But I think most of us know that when you start to see the differences in sensor sizes is when the light goes down a bit. So I anticipate that the X100 VI is going to shine in very low light conditions with that fast lens and then also that very nice APS-C sensor. She said that when things get more interesting is autofocus. The L10 autofocus is noticeably snappier and more reliable, with human detection locking on to even to people passing in the background. The X100 VI, by contrast, missed focus randomly, sometimes even on still subjects. Then she gets into battery life, where the L10 is a clear winner. Julia went through three X100 VI batteries during a single day of shooting, while the L10 ran on one. So that was quite interesting. She also gets into the X100 VI's IBIS and higher resolution sensor pull more power, and the batteries themselves are physically smaller. For video, the X100 VI shoots up to 6.2K 30p or 4K at 60p with a slight crop and includes a built-in 4-stop ND filter. So Julia notes that it introduces a blue color cast that requires correction in post. The L10 tops out at 5.6K at 60p and handles 4K 30p and 4K 120p without any crop at all, which is impressive for a camera this size. The X100 VI also has a built-in flash, real mechanical IBIS, and a hybrid optical electronic viewfinder, while the L10 offers a more customizable button layout, a dedicated photo video switch, and Panasonic's real-time LUT system that lets you load and stack color custom profiles straight from the camera. So it's kind of interesting. These are just some of the highlights from the video, but I think if you're interested in these two cameras and possibly debating even which one to take on a trip, especially if you're lucky enough to have both, or you're contemplating which one maybe to buy, I think this could be really helpful. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. I want to thank our Inner Circle members, those folks that support this community month in and month out. We have a great crew of people. I'm going to be hanging out with some of them in Costa Rica, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also already thinking about next year's workshops, both online and in person. And of course, our Inner Circle members get notified of the workshop schedule beforehand, and they also get discounts on all the events that we go to. If you're interested in joining the Inner Circle, all you have to do is click on the Patreon tile on all the pages of the digital story, nose around a bit, and the next thing you know, once you sign up, you'll be hearing from me and we'll get you started. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this community. And finally, our good friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the digital story. Thank you so much, Red River Paper, for all the help that you provide for us, including our upcoming inkjet printing workshop that will be in November of this year. I'm really looking forward to doing that workshop again. It's always so much fun, and it's great to be working with Red River Paper to do it. In the meantime, if you have questions, if you're wondering about what paper to select, just go to their site. There's a tile on all the pages of the digital story. You can nose around a bit, get tons of information, make your selections, and start printing now. And then if you need a little more help, join us for the workshop in November. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I'm off to Costa Rica. I'll be talking to you from there. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.